ladies and gentlemen, you'll never know how happy we are to be here with you tonight in Chicago, America.
We're in London, you fool. London.
Well, I didn't know. I've been traveling to so many places, I wasn't quite sure just where we were.
Well, go ahead. It won't make any difference anyway.
So this is London, eh?
Yes, London.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Said that once.
All right. I'm so happy to be here with you tonight in London, Scotland.
Stan and Ollie, known respectfully as Mr. Laurel and Mr. Hardy, two of Hollywood's most beloved comedians. Laurel, the thin one with his dumb and innocent expression, and Hardy, the fat one with his southern drawl and pompous style. Once described as dither and dignity, Stan Laurel and Oliver Hardy appeal to audiences young and old with their childlike innocence and gentle humor.
What's your name? This
is my friend, Mr. Laurel, Admiral. My name is Hardy. Oliver Norville Hardy.
Joined up together, eh?
Yes, ma'am. We are buddies.
What on earth ever prompted you to join the Legion?
Well, you see, Brigadier, it was like this.
I came here to help him forget.
Forget? Forget what? Well.
I forgot.
Hello, I'm Bob Monkhouse. I first became aware of Stan and Ollie when I visited the newsreel theatres. Up until the late 60s, London was dotted with them. Small cinemas that showed a daily program of news items, cartoons, and vintage black and white comedies. Unlike the major cinema chains, the newsreel theatres were the best places to catch up with the antics of Bugs Bunny, Mickey Mouse, and the great Hollywood comedians like Buster Keaton, Harold Lloyd, Charlie Chaplin, and of course, Stan and Ollie. I remember the excitement I felt as the house lights dimmed and that familiar tune of theirs filled the auditorium. Audiences looked forward to the antics of Laurel and Hardy and their various attempts to succeed that always ended in disaster. The simple task of cleaning a chimney that demolishes the entire living room. The preparations for renovating a boat that ends up in full-scale war. Usually it was Stan's stupidity that caused Ollie to exclaim, "Well, here's another nice mess you've gotten me into." Yet Stan could be the voice of reason, helping Ollie to serenade a bashful sweetheart, for instance, or suggesting a way in which the boys, as they were affectionately referred to throughout their career, could improve their lot in life.
A nice little fish business and making money.
You know, Ollie, I've been thinking.
What about?
I know how we could make a lot more money.
How?
Well, if we caught our own fish, we wouldn't have to pay for it. Then whoever we sold it to, it would be clear profit.
Tell me that again.
Well, if you caught a fish, and whoever you sold it to, they wouldn't have to pay for it. Then the profits would go to the fish.
I know exactly what you mean. Your idea is to eliminate the middleman. Here we are making pennies when we should be making dollars.
Certainly. All we need is a couple of fish poles.
A couple of fish poles? With a $1 million idea like that? What we're going to do is get ourselves a boat.
The opening of their 1932 comedy, Toad in the Hole. That's the one you may recall that ends in the full-scale war I mentioned earlier. And who could forget Stan locked in the cabin while Ollie attempts to paint the ship's mast, the boys' water fight, and the eventual destruction of all they surveyed. Between 1928 and 1940, Laurel and Hardy made some 80 films. The majority were short two-reel comedies lasting approximately 20 minutes, but some were complete features. Beginning their careers as silent film comedians, Stan and Ollie, who'd first appeared together as early as 1917, made the transition to sound with ease. Their comical dialogue was as hilarious as their visual gags, as the following extract from their 1932 film, Scram, illustrates. The judge, by the way, is played by the regular team member, Richard Kramer.
Next case, Laurel and Hardy. Take off your hat. You're charged with vagrancy. Are you guilty or not guilty?
Not guilty, Your Highness.
On what grounds?
We went on the grounds. We were sleeping on a park bench.
The jail wasn't full? I'd give you both 180 days. Inasmuch as the jail is full, I'm going to give you both just 1 hour.
Thank you, sir.
To get out of town! And never let me set eyes on you again. Case dismissed.
Does that mean we can go back and sleep on the park bench?
Scram, or I'll build a jail for you.
Whether sleeping on park benches or catching fish, Stan and Ollie were, it seems, inseparable. But that wasn't always the case. So how did this extremely fun pair meet up in the first place?
Where were you born?
I don't know.
Fancy not knowing where you were born.
Well, I was too young to remember. How do I know where I was born?
Didn't you once tell me that you had an uncle?
Sure, I've got an uncle. Why?
Now we're getting someplace. Is he living?
No. He fell through a trapdoor and broke his neck.
Was he building a house?
No, they were hanging him.
Even though Stan Laurel couldn't remember where he was born, in that extract from their 1930 film, The Laurel and Hardy Murder Case, Arthur Stanley Jefferson was born in 1890. Arthur Stanley who?
Oh, I was born in England, in Ulverston, Lancashire. And my family were a theatrical family. My dad wrote shows and produced shows and also had a circuit of theatres around the north of England. So I was born in Lancashire, but I was raised in several parts. In Durham, around the Tyneside, and finally up in Glasgow, Scotland. I received most of my education.
You once told me your father was in the lumber business.
Well, I know he was, but it was only in a small way.
What do you mean, small way?
Well, he used to sell toothpicks.
Well, go ahead and make some toothpicks. Be a chip off of the old block.
A chip off the old block. And that's just what Stan became. He quickly followed in his father's footsteps, sharing his passion for show business. After touring England in a pantomime version of Sleeping Beauty for the princely sum of £1 a week, Stan was invited to join Fred Karner's Army, the famous music hall troupe, as understudy to the then unknown Charles Chaplin. In 1910 and 1912, Karner's troupe set sail for America. On the second trip, Hollywood producer Mack Sennett signed up Chaplin to make a series of one-reel comedies. Karner's troupe folded, but Stan decided to remain in the States. The then head of Universal Pictures, Carl Laemmle, promptly signed him to appear in a series of silent film comedies. They weren't very successful, and Universal refused to renew his contract. So Stan's co-star, Australian actress May Charlotte Dahlberg, teamed up with him in a new vaudeville act. The story goes that May persuaded Stan to change his name to Laurel, as Stan Jefferson contained 13 letters. However, there's also a story that Stan, seeing a picture in his dressing room of a Roman general wearing a laurel wreath, thought that Stan Laurel would sound funnier. May Dahlberg eventually returned to Australia, leaving Stan free to marry Lois Nielsen. And in 1917, film cowboy Gilbert M. Bronco Billy Anderson hired Stan for a comedy short called The Lucky Dog. In that film, a fat villain holds Stan at gunpoint in order to rob him of some money that the thief has unwittingly put into Stan's pocket by mistake. The fat man? None other than Oliver Hardy. Mrs. Lucille Hardy Price.
His father's first name was Oliver Hardy, and his mother's maiden name was Norval. So he was named Norval Hardy. But he took the name because he was proud of his... He always said, he said, well, it sounded more impressive, Oliver Norval Hardy.
Oliver Norval Hardy was born in Harlem, Georgia, on the 18th of January, 1892. He was a large baby, weighing 14 pounds at birth. His family were of English stock and, it said, could trace their ancestors back to Admiral Lord Nelson. Blessed with an attractive singing voice, Ollie was a soprano at the age of 8. After deciding against a career in the legal profession, Ollie spent his time watching film comedians in the small movie theater that he owned. Convinced that he could be just as funny, given the opportunity, he traveled to Florida in 1913 to work as an extra with the Lubin Motion Picture Company. Here he starred in a number of short comedy films as a heavy, for which he earned $5 a day. Known by the movie-going public as Oliver Hardy, close friends and relatives always referred to him as Babe.
That was given to him by an Italian barber. He liked the smell of the barber shop when the men would go in to get shaved, and he'd see the talcum powder and all the stuff they used, and he liked the smell of it. So he went in one day and sat in a chair and told the barber he wanted it to be shaved. Well, he was so young that he was just barely starting to grow a beard. But the barber went ahead. I'll humor him and let him have a shave. So he did, and when he got through, well, he would pat Babe on the cheek and say, "Nice a baby, nice a baby." So the fellows at Lubin started teasing him about it, and then finally it just became a nickname and a sort of an expression of fondness for him.
In 1915, Oliver Hardy played straight man to comedian Bobby Ray in the film The Paper Hanger's Helper. From here, he went on to star in Gilbert M. Bronco Billy Anderson's 1917 short, The Lucky Dog, and his first appearance with Stan Laurel. Never out of work, Ollie made over 200 movies. Like Stan, he settled in California and joined the Hal Roach studio. Roach had started in films as an actor until he inherited some money and formed his own production company. He allowed Stan to develop story gags and direct, and, as his co-star Anita Stanley Garvin recalls, Stan was the mastermind behind a majority of these early comedy classics.
Stan Laurel was such a dear friend. He was such a clever man. He would make the directors think that they were directing the picture. He was the one that was really directing it. But he did it so beautifully that you had to admire the man. He could write, he could direct, he could funny, everything.
In 1926, Stan was asked to direct a picture for Roach called Get 'Em Young, in which Ollie was to play a butler. But fate, in the shape of a leg of lamb, was to change all that. Stan Laurel.
Babe came down to the lot and was put into stock. We had a little stock company of comics and what have you, character actors, and we used to use them in all the different pictures, wherever the cast was necessary. So we had a picture all ready to go in which Babe was supposed to be a butler. However, on the Friday before we start to shoot on the following Monday, Babe likes to cook, or liked to cook, rather, and he burnt his arm very badly, cooking the leg of lamb, all the hot grease. So, had to go to the hospital, in fact. So, we tried to get another comic to take his place. But time was drawing short, and finally, Mr. Roach suggested that I should go in and play. So, I went in and played the part. Well, at the preview, they liked it very much, and Roach decided that I should continue to write myself in into the following pictures.
In the film, Stan introduced for the first time his whimpering cry that was to become his trademark in later movies. For the film Sailor Beware, Ollie debuted his embarrassing waving of the tie and his famous exasperated look into camera.
That happened accidentally the same way. He just, without realizing he was looking at the camera, he just gave it that tape to the camera, and like he was looking right at the audience. Well, in those days, they just didn't do things like that. But that got a laugh in the preview. He said one time that, that Stan had thrown a line at him, and for once, he went completely blank. He couldn't think of what to say. So in his nervousness, he picked up the tie. And he found he was starting to wipe his nose with it. He thought, oh, that's not going to look good. That won't look good. And so he twiddled his tie like this and dropped the tie.
In the film Putting Pants on Philip, Ollie played Piedmont Mumble Thunder, who tries to get his kilted Scottish nephew Philip, played by Stan, to conform to a stricter and more American dress sense. This hilarious film is one of the earliest demonstrations of the famous Laurel and Hardy comedy that was to follow. Yet, Ollie freely admitted that the movie-making process bored him. He was quite happy to leave all the planning to Stan.
Babe wasn't serious. You know, he loved to play. He didn't hold much interest in the production of the picture. I'd never see him between pictures. We'd call up and say, when do we start or when do we sort? I think our success in that situation was due to the fact they were never mixed socially. There was never any jealousy between the team because of Babe's attitude that he left everything to me. He was very happy to know that he didn't have to be worried or have any responsibility at all. He wouldn't accept any responsibility. Oh, they were marvelous days.
Now, wait a minute. Isn't this silly?
What?
Here we are, two grown-up men acting like a couple of children. Why, we ought to be ashamed of ourselves, throwing water at one another.
Well, you started it.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
Well, I didn't.
You certainly did.
Well, I didn't. Well, I know that I didn't. You did, too.
Wearing derby hats, conservative suits, high collars, and polka dot ties, Laurel and Hardy played builders, salesmen, servants, and sailors in their various attempts to find themselves socially acceptable. Stan played the dumb innocent, while Ollie based his dignified character on a newspaper strip called Helpful Henry. Like Ollie, Helpful Henry's attempts to help others usually ended in disaster. To play opposite the boys, Roach hired a team of stock players, including James Finlayson, Charlie Hall, Edgar Kennedy, Mae Bush, usually in the role as Ollie's wife, and Anita Garvin. Even a young Gene Harlow made a brief guest appearance, but it was James Finlayson, the master of the double take, with his cockeyed squint, wispy moustache, and bald head, who was thwarted by Stan and Ollie at every turn. In this scene from Thicker Than Water, Finlayson encounters the boys at their best. Ollie's long-suffering wife is played by Daphne Pollard.
Oh, good afternoon, Mr. Finlayson.
Good afternoon.
What's the idea?
I'm here to collect the payment on the furniture.
Why, it was paid yesterday.
Steady, woman. Not to me, it wasn't.
Oliver? Oliver?
Yes, baby, I'm coming.
There must be some mistake. Oliver, did I or did I not give you the money to pay on the furniture?
You certainly did.
Then why wasn't it paid?
Well, I gave it to him to pay it for me.
Then what did you do with it?
I gave it back to him. You gave it to me? Yeah, I gave it to you to pay my room and board. Then you gave it to her. Remember?
Do you mean to say that the money that he gave to you, that you gave to him, that he gave to me, was the same money that I gave to him to pay him?
Well, if that was the money that you gave to him to give to me to pay to him, it must have been the money that I gave him to give to you to pay my rent, didn't I?
Mr. Finlayson, I owe you an apology.
And $37.
Then this money must belong to you.
And the next time, I want my payment without any detour. He gave it to you, and you gave it to him, and who gave it to what? Why, you're all nuts!
You big dumbbell, I can't trust you to do a thing. And as for you, I have a good mind to throw you out.
You can't do it.
I can't do it?
No, because I paid my room and board in advance, and I gave it to him.
What do you mean you gave it to me? That was the money that she gave to me, and I gave it to you to give to him. Then you gave it back to me, and I had to give it to her to give to him.
Was that the money that she gave to him that I gave to you to give to
him? Why, certainly.
Well, if she wants to give it to him, that's her business. No use you and I arguing about
it. Oh, cut it out, cut it out.
Together, Stan and Ollie made numerous silent comedies, the most famous being the 1927 short, The Battle of the Century, which contains one of the biggest pie-throwing scenes in the history of the cinema. At the film's climax, thousands, literally thousands, of custard, blueberry, raspberry, banana, and lemon pies are thrown in the faces of dozens of extras. A lot of the gags and story ideas in these silent films, which obviously we can't illustrate on radio, were later reused in the boys' sound pictures. Carrying a bulky washing machine up a flight of stairs, for instance, in Hats Off, became the inspiration behind the music box. And Stan and Ollie's attempts to outwit their wives in We Four Down and Their Purple Moment was a constant theme throughout many of their later films. With the coming of sound, many silent comedians failed to make the transitions. Even stars as great as Harry Langdon and Harold Lloyd, even the great Charlie Chaplin never recaptured the popularity he enjoyed as a silent star. Yet his one-time understudy, Stan Laurel, together with his partner, Oliver Hardy, were about to embark on the most successful period of their entire careers.
Dear ladies and gentlemen, Hal Roach presents for your entertainment and approval Laurel and Hardy in their latest comedy entitled Another Fine Mess. Photography by Jack Stevens, recording by Elmer Regis, editing by Richard Currier, dialogue by H.M. Walker, and direction by James Parrott. We thank you.
Thank you. In order to make the Laurel and Hardy pictures like Another Fine Mess into a worldwide success, Roach had each of the films re-photographed with Stan and Ollie speaking in the native tongue relevant to the country in question.
We make the picture entirely in English, naturally. Then we preview it. So we get it cut and all ready for shipping. So then we knew exactly what we were going to use of the film. So then we brought in the French, German, Italian, and Spanish interpreters. And they translated our dialogue into each language. And each interpreter brought his own company. People who spoke Spanish, people who spoke French, and so forth. Then we'd set up the camera for the first scene. He'd tell us our dialogue that we spoke in English, so we knew what it meant. But he'd tell us in French, for instance, and we'd write it phonetically as it sounded to us. But knowing the meaning of it, we got the correct intonation, what have you, you see, which is helpful. So we set up the camera and we'd do the French version, the first scene. After the first scene, we'd still hold the camera and we'd do the German scene. And each scene we did four times.
In any language, the Laurel and Hardy brand of comedy was an enormous hit with the movie-going public. Thanks to some amazing visual gags, as Alan Young, actor and friend of Stan Laurel, recalls.
When they're driving down the street, and they drive between two streetcars, and they come out with a tall, thin Pontiac. I mean, it was brilliant, but that gag cost $25,000. And the studio didn't want to do it. It was too expensive for one joke. But that's the biggest joke in the world. Another one where they drove over a saw, and the saw cut the car in half, and one drove one way and the other went the other. That was an expensive gag. That's the one time a Stan said he fought for it.
But, as it had been from the very beginning, Stan was still the driving force behind every production. He was also responsible for the theme tune, the cuckoo song that we played earlier in the program. According to composer Marvin Hatley, Stan knew exactly what he wanted.
I made this little silly tune as a radio time signal to count the hours. And Stan Law came up and heard it and says, that tune's for me. That's just what I want. That little cuckoo part's just what I like. See that? So he says, I'd like to use that for my theme. I says, well, swell. So then I showed him how it was put together. This represents Stan Law. Supposed to be cuckoo. Same thing over. Not very bright. He's dull. He's stupid, see? That's what that means, stupid. And the big one, babe, is very dominating, see? Arrogant. He's the boss. Like a bugle call in the army. So we put them together.
As the Laurel and Hardy films grew in popularity, audiences delighted in Stan's mannerisms and Ollie's pompous fidgeting. Their films were full to overflowing with a mixture of slapstick and extremely witty dialogue. By now, Stan was achieving the biggest laughs with his ridiculous explanations, while Ollie commanded nothing but mirth for his pompous dignity.
Wealthy young widow with large fortune wishes to communicate with congenial young men. Object, matrimony. Reply, box 204J.
Probably some old crab with a face that would stop a clock. I wouldn't want to marry her no matter how much money she had.
Well, I'd marry her.
You would?
Well, after all, beauty's only skin deep. I'd take some of the money and I'd have her face lifted. Then I could settle down and I wouldn't have to scrape chins anymore. Wouldn't have to work hard anymore.
Tell me that again.
Huh?
Let me hear that again.
Well, if beauty was only skin deep, I could take some of the money and I could have her skinned and then she'd be able to look at a clock without having to work hard anymore. Then we could settle down and I could scrape her chin and congenial if I didn't have to work hard anymore.
That's a good idea.
Stan and all his popularity with audiences meant that Hollywood producers like Walt Disney, who was a close friend, paid homage to their comedy by featuring animated caricatures of them in cartoons, such as Mickey's Gala Premiere, Mickey's Polo Team, and the silly symphony Mother Goose Goes to Hollywood. Their success even led to the occasional appearance on radio, here, opposite a young Lucille Ball.
Welcome to Mail Call, Laurel and Hardy.
Thank you, Lucille. Who's that? Well, that's Lucille Ball. Ball? That's right, Ball. Can a bouncer on me knee? Why, no, I'm surprised at you, Stanley. Ever since I told you about girls, you've been chasing them.
Oh, I've chased them before, but I never knew why.
Anyhow, you apologize to Miss Ball. Tell her you don't want to bounce her on your knee.
I don't.
No, you don't.
What's the matter, I broke my leg or something?
Oh, you're impossible.
Oh, that's all right, Mr. Hardy. Mr. Laurel meant no harm.
I'm not so sure.
Me either.
Back in the cinema, classic Laurel and Hardy films included The Laurel and Hardy Murder Case, Laughing Gravy, Our Wife, Pardon Us, Come Clean, Bo Hunks, called Bo Chumps here in England, and Helpmates. In 1932, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences joined Laurel and Hardy's fan club by awarding the boys, who were at the peak of their careers, with an Oscar for their film The Music Box.
We asked where number Seltzer House was, and they said that's at the top of the stoop. Top of the stoop. There's about 1,800 steps. So anyway, we start up. We have our troubles getting up there. We finally get up there. And the postman comes along, and he said, do you bring the pan up the steps? And he said, yeah. He says, why don't you drive around the road? He says, it comes right up here, the street. So we pick up the pan and we take it down again to drive us.
The Music Box contained all the classic ingredients. A bulky piano, an incredibly long and difficult flight of stairs, a temperamental horse, a stubborn policeman, an irate homeowner, and in the middle of it all, the catalyst for belly-aching laughs, Stan and Ollie. Having finally reached the house and delivered the piano, the boys proceed to clear up the mess they've made. As the piano plays, they launch into a wonderful dance routine. Simplistic, yet ingenious. Clever, and at the same time, deeply heartwarming. Whatever the disasters that have befallen them, they're forgiven, and the audience is completely on their side. Music was to play a very large part in the films of Laurel and Hardy. As we heard earlier in the program, Ollie was a natural when it came to singing, and both he and Stan shared a talent for mime, which put them in good stead when it came to dance routines. A number of their later films would involve a mixture of singing and dancing.
We're going to go, we're going to go, we're going to go way down in Dixie, where the hymns are thumped on bread to lay, scramble eggs in the new morning. We're going to see, we're going to see, we're going to see our home in Dixie. You can tell the
how to spell it.
Then we're going.
All right, we're going.
You know we're going.
Then we're going.
To a home in Dixieland. We're going to go way down in Dixie, where the hymns are thrown on bread to lay. Scrambled eggs in the new morning. We're going to see. We're going to see. We're going to see.
The melodious climax to Way Out West, their 1937 masterpiece, which we shall hear more about later in the program. After working on some 30-odd films in the space of 3 years, Stan and Ollie decided to take a well-earned vacation in Europe. But they were quite unprepared for the reception committee that awaited them in England. As their ship docked, crowds lined the streets, whilst a band played the Cuckoo Song.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Oliver Hardy speaking. I'm taking this opportunity of thanking you and the countless friends in the British Isles for the wonderfully wholehearted reception you have given me on my first visit to your beautiful country. Words cannot describe my feelings of... Will you please stop annoying me while I make this speech?
No, I'm not annoying you. I'm not doing anything.
Now, keep quiet.
All right.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Stop wiggling your tie.
What do you mean, stop wiggling my tie?
Well, every time you get fancy, you start wiggling your tie, and it looks silly.
If you interrupt me again, I'll wiggle you. What are you crying for?
I don't want to be wiggled.
Pardon me, ladies and gentlemen. I wish to speak to my friend privately.
On returning to Hollywood, Stan and Ollie decided to make fewer films, but there were still classics such as Scram, Toad in the Hole, and County Hospital, in which Stan wreaks havoc when he decides to pay Ollie a visit.
How do you feel?
Fine. I didn't expect to see you here today.
Well, I didn't have anything else to do, so I thought I'd drop in and see you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
What have you got there?
I brought you some hard-boiled eggs and some nuts.
Now, you know I can't eat hard-boiled eggs and nuts. If you wanted to bring me something, why didn't you bring me a box of candy?
Well, it costs too much.
Well, what has that got to do with it?
You didn't pay me for the last box I brought you. Have one?
No, I'd rather not. Don't put your hand in there. I have to drink that water. You had nothing else to do. So you thought you'd come around and see me. Here I was for the first time in my life, having a nice, peaceful time. And you had to come and spoil it. Hard-boiled eggs and nuts.
Feature-length pictures included Pack Up Your Troubles, Fra Diavolo, The Devil's Brother, and one of the top-grossing films of 1934, Sons of the Desert, known in Britain under the title Fraternally Yours. Ollie's wife is played here by Mae Bush.
You see, the Sons of the Desert are giving their annual convention in Chicago next week, and Stan and I are going.
Oh, you are?
We thought the trip would do us good. Besides being good for us in a business way. You see, we'll meet new friends and see a lot of new faces, and the change of climate will be good for us in a good many ways. What's that for?
Just this. You're not going.
What do you mean I'm not going?
Just that. You're not going to the convention. You're going to the mountains with me.
But he can't go to the mountains, you see. He took a note, and the exhausted ruler said that...
Now listen, Dogo. Are you going?
Huh?
I said, are you going?
Yes, sugar. Mrs. Hardy.
Who said so?
Him.
Oh. Well, you can do as you please. But you're going to the mountains with me.
While down on the South Sea Island, underneath the beauty of the stars, I strayed upon the maiden who were drumming on their guitars. A fool of maid was dancing, and I knew I'd found my paradise. So this is what I told her as I gazed into her eyes. Honolulu, baby, where'd you get those eyes and the dark complexion? I just idolize. Honolulu, baby, where did you get that?
One of the boys' most popular features was Babes in Toyland, based on an operetta by Victor Hubert. In the fairy tale world of Mother Goose characters, Stan and Ollie played toy makers, Stanny Dum and Ollie D. It was a fun picture, as co-star Jerry Tucker, who was a child actor at the time, remembers.
I remember Stan and Ollie with love and affection. And you know, when you're a child, you don't have to think about who a big star is or anything. All you know is that these are two people that are just very nice, two very, very funny men. And when we were shooting this movie, there's a scene in this where Hardy gets dunked in a pool. And while they were in the process of doing this, the equipment broke. And he fell right smack in the pool. And, of course, I thought it was, what, as a child, I thought it was terrific. I thought they were playing games, but they weren't. And they had to shoot that scene all over again, and he got soaking wet.
Babes in Toyland was pure fantasy, but in Hollywood, reality is sometimes stranger than fantasy, and while the boys were enjoying the adulation of their fans, their private lives were proving something of a tragedy. Ollie divorced his wife Myrtle, whom he'd married in 1925. Stan divorced Lois after the death of their child Stanley Robert, and had a short-lived marriage with Virginia Ruth Rogers. Immersing himself in his work, Stan forced Hal Roach to give him more control. After making 71 films with the studio, both he and Ollie felt they deserved more. Roach finally gave in, and their next two films, Our Relations and Way Out West, were credited as Stan Laurel Productions. Way Out West is considered by many, including me, as Laurel and Hardy's finest film. Its storyline is simple, yet effective. Arriving in a small Midwest town called Brushwood Gulch, Stan and Ollie are anxious to pass the deeds for a gold mine to its rightful owner, a pretty young girl, called Mary Roberts and played by Rosina Lawrence. But the girl's wicked guardian, played with relish by James Finlayson, pretends that his saloon bar wife is Mary in order to claim the gold mine for himself. With their usual flair for catastrophe, Stan and Ollie retrieve the deeds in the nick of time and pass them to their rightful owner. Way Out West is made even more enjoyable by the clever use of music, particularly the boys' gentle, unassuming, but ingenious dance routine and their rendition of the song On the Trail of the Lonesome Pine.
On a mountain in Virginia stands a lonesome pine. Just below is the cabin home of a little girl of mine.
Her name is June, and very, very soon she'll belong to me. For I know she's waiting there for me neath that lone pine tree. Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia, on the trail of the lonesome pine, in the pale moonshine, a heart's entwine, where she carved her name, and I carved mine, or June, just like the mountains are blue, like the pine, I am lonesome for you.
In the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia, on the trail of the lonesome pine, in the pale moonshine, our hearts entwine, where she carved her name and I carved mine, oh June. Like the mountains, I'm blue, like the pine, I am lonesome for you.
In the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia, on the trail of the lonesome pine.
That deep voice for Stan was actually American character actor Chill Wills, while the harmony was provided by the Avalon Boys. After Way Out West, Stan and Ollie appeared in two more features, Swiss Miss and Blockheads. Swiss Miss featured a reworking of the piano gag from the music box. This time, however, the boys have to carry the instrument across a flimsy rope bridge suspended 1,000 feet above a Swiss gorge. Halfway across, they meet a gorilla. In Blockheads, Stan plays a First World War veteran who's finally reunited with his buddy Ollie. Then, during a break from Roach, Stan and Ollie made the Flying Deuces for RKO, in which they found themselves in the French Foreign Legion. It was while making the film that Ollie met continuity girl Lucille Jones, with whom he was to spend the rest of his life.
What are you getting so mushy about?
Well, I'm glad you asked me. I couldn't keep it from you much longer.
What?
Life's biggest moment. I'm going to be married.
You don't believe me.
Yes, I don't believe... What do you mean you don't believe me? Didn't I just tell you I was going to be married?
Who to?
Why, a woman, of course. Did you ever hear of anybody marrying a man?
Sure.
Who?
My sister.
Back at Roach again, Laurel and Hardy made A Chump at Oxford, a slapstick version of MGM's A Yank at Oxford, starring Robert Taylor. The film gave Stan the opportunity to play two roles when a blow on the head transforms him into a character called Lord Paddington, Oxford's greatest scholar. One of Laurel and Hardy's co-stars was Hammer horror star Peter Cushing.
Well, I was only a glorified extra, but it was wonderful to think I worked with the two greatest comics. I think it's wonderful. And that was one of the jobs I got, the one with Laurel and Hardy, during a period of my deciding to try and get home, and before I succeeded.
Saps at Sea was their last film for Hal Roach. In fact, their last contract with the studio had been negotiated with Roach's son, Hal Roach Jr., but Stan and Ollie were still optimistic about the future. After a brief setback trying to form their own production company, they moved to 20th Century Fox. Their first film was Great Guns, followed by A Haunting We Will Go. A number of features followed, including 4 more for Fox and 2 for MGM, one of which, Air Raid Wardens, reunited the boys with Roach co-star Edgar Kennedy. But to Stan Laurel, all these films were pale imitations of their past work.
We had some very bad experiences after leaving Roach. With Roach, more freedom. We could do what we wanted and make it how we wanted them. With the other places like Metro and 20th Century Fox, the story was written, cut and dried, and it had to be shot per script. The routines and gags are all of what we'd previously done, and the story in back of them didn't permit them to get the best out of it. So it was a disgusting affair to us all the way through. So we were happy when the contract was called off.
Like their films for Hal Roach, these later features were made in black and white, yet Stan and Ollie actually made 2 color films. The first, The Rogue Song, released in 1930, is sadly lost, whereas the second, a short government film called The Tree in a Test Tube, was produced during their time at Fox. Ironically, most of the Laurel and Hardy films have since been colorized for television and video screenings. A sensitive subject with movie fans, its only defense being that it's introduced whole new audiences to the wonderful antics of Laurel and Hardy. With their film careers almost at an end, Stan and Ollie decided to tour Europe once more. Stan, who had recently married singer Ida Raphael, accepted an invitation from British theatre owner Bernard Delfont to tour the English music halls. It was a rare opportunity to see the boys on stage. As film historian and official biographer of Laurel and Hardy, John McCabe recalls.
Once I watched Stan in the later years backstage, I think at the Hippodrome in Birmingham, just before he was going on. And like any performer, there's a nervousness, a certain tension. But the minute that he got his cue, and it was, as I recall, it was a part of the Cuckoo song, The Dance of the Cuckoos, their theme song. There was a particular beat that he started on. And just before that started, there was a beautiful warmth that came to his face as he then walked out. And then I watched him as he came back out, and there was such a feeling of completion. It was what he was born to do, and it was deeply, deeply moving.
Stan and Ollie were astounded at just how much the public loved them outside America. All his wife, Mrs. Lucille Hardy Price, takes up the story.
Throughout Italy and France, both, they have Laurel and Hardy masks. We'd never seen them. So lining up at the station are all of these people. Half of them are wearing Laurel masks and half of them Hardy masks. Then from Marseille, on the way down along the Riviera into Rome, at every station, the train would stop. We found out later what had happened. The engineer had phoned the station ahead and said, Laurel and Hardy are aboard. So the train would stop at every station, and here are these mobs of people. They're reaching through the train windows to shake hands, just to touch them.
Here's a piece of rare sound archive of Laurel and Hardy on stage in Belgium in 1948.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. You're very, very kind, and I do wish there was some more we could do to entertain you.
Why don't you sing a song for the ladies and gentlemen?
Well, that's a good idea, Stanley. I'm glad you thought of that.
Glad you enjoyed it, though. Yeah. First time.
Shine on, how there's moon up in the sky. Since January, February, June, or July. Snow time, say no time to stay. Outdoors and school.
A brief return to Hollywood saw Ollie appearing in two films for Republic Pictures without Stan. The first, The Fighting Kentuckian, starred John Wayne. The second, Riding High, directed by Frank Capra, featured Bing Crosby. Then, in 1950, a French production company offered Stan and Ollie a chance to appear together again. It was the moment that fans had been waiting for. But, as Stan Laurel later recalled, it was a disaster.
First, they started out with French writers, and they brought in Italian writers, and we took a couple of writers with us over there. So there were three nationalities all trying in. Their sense of humor is entirely deprived. And then we came to shoot. We had part Italian cast and part French cast. They spoke in their own language. We only spoke English, so nobody knew what each other was talking about. Then we were just hoping that we were answered the right question. Then on top of that, I got very ill, went into hospital with operation. So I came out of there weighing 114 pounds, up to 160. So I could hardly stand up to finish the picture up, and it was a mess all the way around.
Entitled Atoll K, in which Stan and Ollie believe they've discovered a uranium mine, the film was a flop at the box office, ending up on American television in a severely edited version. Although he had been ill during the making of the film, Stan was well enough to undertake another tour of the British Isles in 1952. Accompanied by Ollie, they were mobbed wherever they went, as co-star Vivian Blaine recalls.
As a matter of fact, as the word got out that their ship was about to dock at Cove, Ireland,
yes.
The signal went around, all the schools were closed, and thousands of people were at the dock to meet them. And then a most unusual and wonderful thing happened. The great carolling bells of the Cove Cathedral began ringing. And this time it had nothing to do with a hymn or an anthem. This time, those wonderful old bells were ringing the cuckoo song.
1954 saw Laurel and Hardy as guests on the This Is Your Life television series, hosted by Ralph Edwards. Thanks to their films being screened again on American television, Laurel and Hardy were right back in the spotlight. Sadly, however, these TV versions were usually retitled, edited to fit advertising schedules, and, worse still, Stan and Ollie didn't receive a single penny in royalties. But it didn't prevent the fan mail from pouring in, as a whole new generation of children rediscovered the magic of their films.
Good morning, sir. We're taking orders for Christmas cards. I designed them myself, and my partner, Mr. Laurel, wrote the beautiful verse.
Swell.
May I read you one?
Read them.
Thank you, sir. 'Twas Christmas Day in the poorhouse, and the boys were feeling blue. The boys in gray were fighting. A Merry Christmas to you.
And a Happy New Year to you.
especially for the ladies. Jingle bells, coming through the rye. I wish you a Merry Christmas, even as you and I. What's the matter with it?
No sentiment.
Ask him if he's got a mother. That generally gets him.
You ask him.
Did you ever have a mother?
Oh! Now you hit me.
That's fine. We have one here dedicated to mothers. May I read it to you?
Read it.
Merry Christmas, Mother. Merry Christmas, Ma. Hi, Mommy, Mommy, and a hot cha-cha.
Now,
let me call you, sweetheart. I'm in love with you. Let me call you, sweetheart. I'm in love with you. Keep the love light burning in your eyes so blue. Let me call you, sweetheart.
Roach Jr. was so impressed with the boys' newfound success that he offered them a contract to make a series of 60-minute color films for NBC television called Laurel and Hardy's Fabulous Fables. Made up of gags that Stan had never been able to use in their movies, production was finally cancelled when Stan suffered a mild stroke. A short while afterwards, Ollie was taken ill with a heart condition. Although his doctor recommended an immediate diet, Ollie suffered a massive stroke in 1956. Stan would visit his old friend and lifelong partner, but was deeply saddened that Ollie didn't always recognize him. Ollie eventually died on August the 7th, 1957. Now alone, Stan surrounded himself with his memories, undertaking many interviews about his work with Ollie. In 1961, he was awarded a special Oscar for creative pioneering in the field of cinema comedy. Too ill to attend the ceremony, the award was collected on his behalf by actor Danny Kaye. Together, Stan and his wife spent many happy years in a Santa Monica apartment. With his name listed in the phone book, he had many visitors, including hundreds of well-wishers, and young Hollywood actors like Dick Van Dyke and Jerry Lewis.
We go through this lifetime but once, and if we were ever to meet a genius, we wouldn't know it. And in the case of Stan Laurel, I knew it, and I indeed met a genius. A genius in life. He was a magnificent human being, and he played the role of living here better than anyone I've ever known. I really miss him, and I miss what I've learned, and very selfishly, I feel deprived. I would have liked for him to be here a longer time. He was one that I think they should have arranged to have live forever. They should have worked that out somehow.
In February 1965, Stan suffered a heart attack. He was gravely ill and confined to his bed. He finally passed away on February the 23rd, but as John McCabe recalls, he was busily cracking jokes to the very end.
I think it's so typical of him that his last words were a gag. The nurse was preparing the hypo after he had his heart attack, and he played it beautifully. He looked rather solemn, and he said, "I wish I was skiing now." And the nurse was talking and says, I didn't know you skied, Mr. Laurel. And he said, "No, I don't, but it's I'd much rather be doing that than doing what I'm doing now, getting a lot of needles stuck into me." And he died a few minutes later.
The island's another day.
The Sons of the Desert song from the Laurel and Hardy film of the same name. And the anthem for a dedicated group of loyal Stan and Ollie fans who now boast members the world over. Proof that the popularity, no, the love for Mr. Laurel, the thin one with his dumb expression, and Mr. Hardy, the fat one with his pompous dignity, has not diminished. It's now 43 years since their last film. It's 54 years since they made the last of their true screen classics for the Hal Roach Studio. But their legacy will continue. The laughter that Stan and Ollie have left behind will be enjoyed for generations to come.
Well, here's another nice mess you've gotten me into.
Well, I could just think of what to do it.
Shut up and come on.
Oh, goodbye, Mr. Hardy.
Goodbye, my dear madam.
And goodbye, Mr. Laurel.
Goodbye.
Ladies and gentlemen, we leave behind a musical memory, a dance version of our theme song, which we hope you will enjoy. The Dance of the Cuckoos. Goodbye.
This is Bob Monkhouse thanking you for joining me in this tribute to Laurel and Hardy, which was written and compiled by Richard Hollis. Production assistant, Janet Staplehurst. Produced by Barry Littlechild.